Hackshaw's biggest fan. You know him as Duke and UNC basketball reporter for The Athletic, formerly in the Charlotte Observer. Super nice guy. One of our favorite people. He is Brendan Marks, now joining us on the Technicom Hotline. Brendan, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Yeah, I'm glad that you kept up your end of the bargain. I only will perform after the hack song. Let me just say, I appreciate a man who goes for a little bit of range. I really do.
I will say, in response to your I will say, I didn't know he had it in him. I literally didn't know he had it. And the other significance here is we've been feuding with Mac's show all week, and Pearl Jam is Mac's favorite band. So it was a diss track, it was a slam track, and it was also a hack track, and a good one at that.
Having a little personal edge to it is what really pushes it over the top for me. I appreciate a little pettiness, too.
Look at that.
We're all on Team Petty.
We knew why we had you on this show, because you are about Team Petty. So I know, listen, we've got a lot to get into, including your latest piece where you talk about who you think is going to be the ACC Player of the Year for basketball. But I'm curious, first off, to get your read on the Jalen Johnson situation now that Jim Boeheim has come out and ethered a 19-year-old kid.
Yeah, Jim Boeheim, man, enemy of 18-year-old basketball players and Greensbury, apparently. But, I think the whole situation with Jalen Johnson has been honestly blown a little bit out of proportion. Like, this is the same thing that how many college football players did in the fall? And we didn't chastise every single one of them, you know. I think locally, fans of UNC and Duke basketball have gotten familiar over the years with guys like Zion, even Cole Anthony last year on a bad, bad UNC team. You know, those guys get hurt, they come back, and I guess we sort of appreciate that. But we also, we shouldn't feel like these players are indebted to play college basketball. If Jalen Johnson thinks that his foot is not fully healthy and that he needs to go get ready for the NBA draft, and he is the one on the precipice of generational wealth, not us, dude, go do your thing. I don't think it's on any of our rights to say that he shouldn't do that. Now, that said, I do think the timing of the decision was interesting. I do think that it's going to be beneficial for Duke to not have him in the fold anymore, strictly from a basketball perspective. But, yeah, certainly, you know, I'm not going to call a kid a quitter when he's on the verge of going to make enough money to supply for his family for, you know, years and years to come.
Brendan, I wanted to follow up on that last little bit. You talked about the basketball advantage here. How much of a loss is Jalen on the court for Duke?
Honestly, I hate to say it, and this is going to sound crazy for a guy who is likely going to be a first-round pick, but the past two games, you know, against NC State, his last game before he opted out of the season, he only played 8 minutes, scored 3 points, and did not play in the second half. That was arguably as dominant as Duke has looked all season, until later this week, the first game after Jalen opted out, when Duke absolutely undressed and embarrassed Wake Forest. Now, I understand that those performances will come against two teams that are combined, I think, 8-18 in the ACC. So neither NC State nor Wake Forest is what we would call a good basketball team, or even a decent one. But from an on-court perspective, certainly not having Jalen in the fold really opens up more natural roles for everyone else. So, you know, the number one guy who I look to is Matthew Hurt. He's Duke's leading scorer, one of the top players in the ACC. You know, he's playing at an all-ACC caliber pace, and now that Jalen is gone, he's playing alongside Mark Williams, who's a freshman center, a seven-footer. Because Mark Williams is in the inside, that means Matthew Hurt doesn't have to be. He doesn't have to bang around with the centers. He doesn't have to worry about trying to play this inside-outside game. Instead, he can hunt for his shot around the perimeter, which is why he has made 16 of his last 19 shots in these two games. He's gone 9 of 11 from three. So having Jalen Johnson out of the fold really opens up more natural positioning for everyone else on Duke's team, and you're already seeing the results from that.
Brendan Marks of The Athletic joining us on Sports Radio FNZ alongside Nick Wilson, Will Pelagic here with you as we talk on a Friday leading into an ACC weekend. I did want to at least get one more on Jalen's side of this. How much does the timing of this departure affect Jalen's draft prospects? Will he be graded down because of this?
He unfortunately, one way or the other, he is going to have to answer. And that sounds probably more treacherous than I mean for it to. But, you know, I had three different NBA teams call me this week, one of them who I have not spoken to in over a year. And all three told me that this is not what they would have advised Jason to do. You know, they don't see it necessarily as quitting per se, but certainly they call into question some of the maturity for a guy who now three times in 3 years has left the place and had to go somewhere else. You know, Jalen, when he was after his, I believe, freshman or sophomore year of high school, he transferred high schools. Then before his senior year, he transferred to IMG Academy under, you know, sort of confusing circumstances, leaves there, doesn't play a single game, comes to Duke, you know, has this foot injury, misses some games. Now he leaves early. So there are definitely worries about sort of the maturity aspect of things with Jalen Johnson. I think that he is really going to have to, as much as he's working on his foot and trying to get healthy before this pre-draft process, and that's what he alluded to in his release, he's really going to have to come up with some answers for why this season at Duke went the way it did. And I understand the kids are playing in the middle of a pandemic. They're not really being paid for this. Like, this is difficult. But he is going to have some really strong answers and take a sense of accountability for, one, what happened on the court, and two, how he ends up leaving Duke in sort of a strange manner.
Brennan, from moving on from the Jalen Johnson thing here, we've got an interesting weekend of basketball, UNC and Louisville. Louisville hasn't played since February 1st, and yet you've got a UNC team that slowly but surely has started to kind of piece together a nice regular season. They've won two straight here. What would a UNC win over Louisville mean this weekend?
Yeah, so, you know, and consider this, too, that Louisville is going to be shorthanded in this game. You know, there's a reason they haven't played since February 1st. It's because of constant COVID-19 protocols within the Cardinals program. And in Louisville's game notes that they send out in advance of this game, they strictly say in the notes, Louisville will be without multiple scholarship players. So, you know, who those players are, we don't know yet. Obviously, if it's Carlick Jones or David Johnson, that's going to be a huge boost for UNC's chances of winning. But regardless, this is a real resume-boosting opportunity for the Tar Heels. You know, UNC has only one quad win all season, and getting a chance against an above, you know, upper-tier sort of ACC team, a team that, if the season were to end today, would be in the NCAA tournament. And at home, which UNC has only had four home ACC games all year, as crazy as that is, you know, this is a huge opportunity for UNC. So I think the Tar Heels are clearly in the tournament right now, but not comfortably so. A win over Louisville would give UNC a little bit more of a cushion, especially not knowing what's going to go on with their schedule in the next couple of weeks here.
Yeah, that's kind of leading to my next point here, Brendan, because you do play a ranked team in Florida State next week. That's obviously something that you have a whole week to prepare for. And then at Syracuse, and then the finale against Duke in Chapel Hill before the ACC tournament. What, I guess, would you say is the path of least resistance, or at least the worst that UNC could do and still get into the tournament based off of what they have left and also what has to happen in Greensboro?
Yeah, I think that if UNC loses to a shorthanded Louisville, that's not a great look. But also, again, you know, Louisville, depending on who they have or don't have, that sort of changes the way that we would view that when the computers sort of see it the same regardless. And obviously, like you mentioned, Florida State is ranked arguably the best team in the ACC, just completely throttled Virginia earlier. And so, you know, losing both of those two games, I think UNC could afford to do, and there is still a path to the tournament. That would mean winning against Syracuse, winning against Duke, and winning at least one or two games in the ACC tournament, whatever that ends up looking like. But I don't think that if UNC loses both the Louisville and the Florida State games, that necessarily means they're not going to make the tournament. This is a team that, you know, when you look at their resume, they do have that one quad win over Duke, and a couple of their other wins are going to continue to get better. If Duke starts playing well, that win starts to look much better as well. So I think that UNC can afford to lose those two games, but, you know, of these last four in the regular season, UNC needs to win at least two of them to stay in a good position, a comfortable position going forward.
Brennan Marks of The Athletic, Duke and UNC basketball reporter on the Technicom hotline here. We've got a lot to get into, but we've got Duke and Virginia this weekend as well. Are you a firm believer in the way that Duke has played recently? And do you think we're going to see Duke actually play it close to Virginia this weekend?
I think that we're going to be pleasantly surprised at the way that Duke plays this weekend because, you know, as much as we talk about how things fit a little bit better without Jalen Johnson earlier, Duke's also just playing harder. You know, they look tougher. You know, they're frankly tired of losing. And, you know, that was sort of the sentiment that you heard from a lot of players after the Notre Dame loss was, you know, we're done with this. You know, we're not sticking up for this anymore. So I do think there's a chance that you're going to see Duke take. I don't necessarily think Duke has enough firepower or positive matchups to beat Virginia. You know, Matthew Hurt and Sam Hauser and Jay Huff, they all sort of float out on the perimeter. But, you know, I think Jamin Brakefield, another Duke freshman, is going to have a really big game defensively and limiting, you know, Virginia's stretch big men. But no, certainly I don't think that this is going to be one of those embarrassing losses that, you know, Duke has had, I think, six losses this year by 7 points or fewer. So if Duke loses, I think it'd be one of those games, but certainly I think that the Blue Devils will play this much, much more closely than they would have even, say, you know, 3 weeks ago.
I know you mentioned this in your mailbag last week about kind of looking at Duke's recruiting and obviously what the roster looks like next year. In terms of what the defections might be for Duke, could this possibly be this season almost a blessing in disguise, given the fact that guys you might have thought would be gone after this year's roster would come back for another year of some possible development?
Oh, I would say that that is more than just a blessing in disguise. I would say that that is really what the intention was for this season. You know, I don't think Mike Krzyzewski ever thought, you know, let's go 500 in the ACC and miss the NCAA tournament. But no, I think Duke certainly has, you know, especially this season, you look at the group they brought in this year, bringing in six freshmen, all of them top 100 players, including Jalen, who's now gone, so there's five left. Of those five, you might realistically get all five back. And of the two sophomores who came back, Matthew Hurt and Wendell Moore, I think there's a really strong chance that Wendell Moore comes back too. So if you're talking about this season from that perspective, it's not necessarily a blessing in disguise, but it's more Coach K is looking at the broader landscape of college basketball. And this is not my argument or my take in the one-and-done, you know, sort of uproar that everyone wants to get into. Like, as Duke has proven and proved in 2015, you can win with one-and-done. But you can't win with just one and done. You have to have veterans who are experienced, who are able to help you in January and February when things get rocky. You need experienced guys who have been through it, know what it takes, and know what it's like to get punched in the mouth and stand back up. So I think from that perspective, that's the biggest thing that Duke is going to take out of the season. And yeah, certainly, if all five of those freshmen come back, which, you know, according to the NBA people I talked to, would be advisable for them, you know, we're going to be talking about Duke early next season as one of the national championship favorites again. This is just sort of the growing pains of rebuilding up the base that the Blue Devils have lost with defections in the last couple of seasons.
Follow this man now on Twitter. I demand it at Brendan R. Marks on Twitter. I can also read his latest piece on who he thinks is the ACC Player of the Year on The Athletic. Brendan, excellent stuff as always, man. Really do appreciate your time, buddy.
I appreciate you guys. Hope you and everyone else are staying safe.